This is Lilia here with the Help Yourself podcast. And with me today, I have two amazing ladies, healers, coaches, who have also healed themselves. And we're going to have a conversation around empowerment and taking control. Here I have Sophie True, who's the creator of True's Festival, the world's first holistic cancer and health awareness festival. And Kathy Grout, who the author of Why Rabbits Don't Get Lymphoma, which is an absolutely brilliant title for a book. And Kathy's a healer and a very good friend. And we discuss health and healing all the time. So I wanted to bring these two ladies together and we can have a debate around how you can help yourself. Mm. Ladies, thank you so much for this. Do you want to just start, Sophie, can you just start with it, just a little bit of how you came to be here?
Yeah. How I came to be on speaking with you both. So, in a nutshell, everything for me kind of started about 5 years ago. So I had been out in Colombia making a film and started to get certain things, some kind of symptoms like fatigue and night sweats. And just kind of put it down to the fact that I'd always been on the go and racing around and didn't think anything of it. And then after, I went to see a chiropractor with my mum actually. She's a physio and she was learning a massage technique. And this lump appeared on my neck and it kept growing. In a nutshell, because I'd been in Colombia, they thought it was tuberculosis. But after going back and forth and being told we're 99% sure it's not cancer, you're too young, come back and get your tuberculosis drugs. Then I got a call at about 9 a.m. to say come in at 7 p.m. And bring someone with you, and that's when I found out I had Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a blood cancer. Ended up having 6 months of chemo, but also doing a lot of integrative therapies alongside that, and just had many light bulb moments of realising how many gaps there are. That was kind of my starting point of looking into stuff as the cancer diagnosis, yeah.
Kathy, can you just tell us about your...
Well, mine was about 22 years ago, and I had the old person's version of your cancer, so it was non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I discovered a big lump in my abdomen when I was exercising, trying to lose weight, of course. And then... that was diagnosed as being non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I was told it was not curable, but so I would always have it. But with treatment, you know, it could be kind of contained. The only snag was that chemotherapy did not work very well on slow-growing non-Hodgkin's lymphomas. They worked better, whatever that means, on fast-growing ones. So I had to wait to find out what type I had, and then when it was decided it was a kind of non-aggressive one, they said, well, let's wait a bit because your lymph nodes are so large, we feel it's about to mutate into something more aggressive, and then we stand a better chance of having an impact on it with chemo, so let's wait another 5 weeks.
That's really unusual.
Well, you know, it was the right set of circumstances for me, because that extra 5 weeks meant that I went to see a reflexologist. I had just been studying reflexology as well as teaching. I knew teaching was no longer for me. So I was preparing for an exit from teaching. I asked my teacher whether reflexology could help with what I had. And he said, yes, absolutely, but you'll need someone to obviously do reflexology for you. You can't do it on yourself. So I found someone locally who was recommended and who must have been an angel sent to me to actually open my eyes. And the first thing he said to me was, Kathy, don't have chemotherapy. It's going to kill you. So that was a big shock because that was the only treatment that I was going to have. Sent me to a naturopath who said, oh, your lumps are far too big, I can't really help you, you need to have the chemo. So in the end, I kept going to Graham, my reflexologist, several times a week. He gave me loads of books to read, and one of them was a book by Rudolf Breuss, who'd killed oh my god, who had cured about 40,000 people of various types of cancers and other diseases, who tried desperately to have his way of dealing with health recognized, and of course he was made unable to practice. And that really inspired me. I took his book to my consultant and I said, this is what I want to do. There wasn't one approach for lymphoma, but there was an approach for leukemia, which I thought, well, blood cancer, you know. And I said to my consultant, this is what I'm going to do for all the weeks that I have to wait. I want to, you know, at least try and do something. And was told that nothing could be done with diet alone, but that she could see I was the type of person who needed to do something, that I couldn't just wait, you know. So she said, yeah, go for it, so long as you don't lose too much weight, so that when we do the chemo, you are not too weak. And, you know, from then on, in fact, chemo was never required, because I started to get better, my lymph nodes started to get softer, which was great, apparently. And then within a year, I no longer had cancer.
Right. Where were you living at that point?
Here.
It's unusual. Here. It's really unusual to, because for me, there was not even any question of time period. It was just straight away, right, it's starting next week.
I think that's what they're doing now. But yeah. That's 22 years ago.
Well, not strictly, because my mum was, she has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and right. she was, well, that's 8 years ago for her, and she was put in the watch and wait protocol, yes. and then it did turn acute, and yes. she had chemo. I've also got another friend who's put in the watch and wait protocol maybe about 4 years ago, and yeah. he's managed to keep it at bay.
Yeah. I think for non-Hodgkin's, that's Hodgkin's, they feel they can get a really good response with chemo drugs. Non-Hodgkin's is a lot trickier to get a response, and I think maybe that's why they're still using the watch and wait, which I think, you know, if you're okay with it, gives you time to actually maybe
research.
Do stuff for you. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. yeah.
Research.
It's kind of like a blessing in disguise, isn't it?
Totally, because I would have had chemo.
Yeah.
I probably would be dead, because it doesn't really work that well for that type of, you know.
Well, having said that, you know, my mum had tumours in her groin and her leg had swollen up.
Yes.
And the chemotherapy shrunk the tumours. I mean, her health is not great today, obviously, as we know. But for her, it did... It helped.
Yes.
And I think that's the message that we really want to get across here, though, along with all the messages that we want to get across, is that there are so many different paths to choose from, and that
definitely.
Can just add to the confusion. But what happened to you is what happens to a lot of people, is that you get almost like rushed into
put in the system, yeah.
So I asked you today, how did you feel? Because you said that you asked the question, what happens if I refuse treatment?
Yeah. So I asked one of the nurses, I just said, how long would I have if I didn't have chemotherapy? And she just said 6 months. And it was this kind of parting comment.
And you were 23.
Yeah, 23. Yeah. So...
How do they know that?
Oh, no, exactly.
Because they treat everyone.
Yeah.
So how can they say you only have 6 months?
Yeah.
Yes.
This is one of those things that are need to be challenged.
Yeah, exactly.
And we believe, don't we? We believe a lot of things that... aren't true.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And how
something you need to take responsibility for.
Yeah. When you hear that people have been given a quote-unquote expiry date, it's just, it's crazy how many people, because that then becomes this kind of self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
nocebo with it.
And for me, like, even when you said that there is, everyone has a totally different path, because everyone has different thought processes, everyone has different ways of relating to stress, resilience, all the kind of epigenetic factors that affect everything, so there is no one size fits all, and even if we have the same cancer type, there's a multitude of reasons why you got it. So and it goes back to the fact that taking responsibility and knowing that you are your own healer, and even anyone who is doing any sort of kind of healing therapy or coaching, it's asking questions and getting you to activate that.
I think it's a moment of also a reconnection to a very basic kind of answer you've got to give yourself. You've got to say, well, do I want to live or do I want to die? Mm. And if I want to live, how do I need to live in order to not continue having having this disease, you know? And again, there'll be a different answer for different people, but it means not being afraid of making changes. In fact, embracing the changes that perhaps you needed to make all along, and because of a set of beliefs you had about what you needed to do in life or whatever, you followed a path that wasn't actually quite right for you.
Made you sick.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly, that made you sick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not saying on top of the disease I've got to feel guilty about having made myself sick. Nothing like that at all. It's about really accepting that you have an impact on your life. You know, who else is going to have an impact on your life if not, you know, you receive life, the way you are in life, you know.
And in the allopathic system, which very much sees us as a kind of lump of meat, you know, where we...
As a statistic,
all these epigenetics, which is outside the genes, all the things that influence the external and the internal environment are obviously having a moment-to-moment impact on our chemistry, our biology and our electromagnetic field. And that's where the energy medicine obviously comes in, where our, as Joe Dispenza teaches, we can heal by thought alone. Mm. Now that concept is outside most people's belief systems.
Yeah.
And what we know about belief systems is that people are killing each other today because they don't have the same belief systems.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's a very emotive thing to say that you can participate in your own healing if you've been told that we've got this. We can look after you, and don't get me wrong, we know that these people that are helping people are angels in disguise in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
They only want the best. Mm. But what we're saying is there's a wider view coming into sight here, where we have a much, much greater impact on our health and happiness than we've ever been led to believe.
Mm.
So you, Sophie, realise...
Massively. And it's quieting down that noise. Because often... Particularly with cancer, because it's so prevalent, it's going to be one in two, I think it's going to be one in one, let's face it, especially with the rise of a lot of things that happen.
So they say, we don't have to believe that. We don't have to go there.
We don't change our trajectory. Yeah, it's a possibility, it's a potential in the field.
Yeah. But there are so many people who have a different opinion, and actually, you know, on a kind of deep level, we know what we need to do, and it's reconnecting to that, it's reconnecting to yourself.
Because
you give your power away.
Yeah, that's the thing to remember. Sorry, I'm not interrupting you. I really want to emphasize what you're saying is that deep down we know what we need to do as individuals. We know. And the whole of the way we've been brought up in our society has disconnected us from that deep...
Our truth.
Exactly, the fact that we know what we can do. And knowing doesn't mean you've got to have degrees and... PhDs and so on before you can even attempt to do anything about your life. No, what you need is to reconnect to that knowing which is deep inside of you. And that can be done just like that if the motivation is strong enough.
Yeah. And that's where the role of meditation and that kind of thing are really going in. For me, I feel like cancer was just a massive kind of overall thing of being disconnected.
Yes.
Disconnected from my body, it woke me up to a body that I didn't even pay any attention to because I lived up here.
Yes.
Running around in my head in a very much kind of sympathetic fight or flight mode.
Yes.
But even if we look at the kind of structure of, in the UK we have some of the worst survivor rates in Europe for cancer, and I feel like there are a number of different factors for that, but this whole kind of doctor-patient relationship of realising that that can be a partnership and it doesn't have to be this kind of there is a hierarchy when it comes to it, and even that pressure that we even put onto the medical system of, oh, they're just going to sort me out, and I just pop in and I get a pill, and then what I do back home doesn't really matter. We've put on this pressure anyway of both sides, and even patient in ancient Greek means the waiting one, so it means someone's waiting. It happens to me rather than
through me. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's the the distinction we have to make now, because I spend, as I know you do, Cathy, a lot of time with my clients, helping them to release the fear and the story they've been given around their type of cancer, the number system, which is so cruel, and the prognosis can be terrifying. And even although you know it's, they still have the power to change it, they can't get over the words.
The initial trauma
yes,
of the diagnosis.
The PTSD, yeah. And we know that can even cause secondaries. Yeah. But within that, so we would like that the language that is used to describe what our incredible, vibrating, massive intelligent cells is actually doing is changed so that people are not terrified, they're empowered.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I would really like to see. But within that...
What does that mean to you, yeah?
Well, also, if you're going to go and say to somebody, you tell me, we have to take responsibility for what we allow people to say and what we hear and what we're willing to take on. But because we've become so disempowered to believe that somebody who's up here, more educated, you know, in a white coat with I don't mean any disrespect in that at all, because there's some incredible oncologists out there that are very integrative. But if you have someone, they say some terrifying things to people that literally gets imprinted, and it all seems impossible to re-imprint it.
Because we miss out. It is that whole kind of dynamic of what makes up a person, and we miss out that kind of spiritual, emotional, mental being aspect when we deliver news. We just look at the physical.
Yes.
And it's very much kind of stuck in the probabilities rather than possibilities.
Yes.
So it's kind of like, well, it's probably going to happen, but what if this could be possible?
Well, the trajectory I always see is if you do nothing, that's what will happen. You know, it's a very obvious trajectory. So if they're saying that there's nothing you can do, what they really should say, well, you know, medication-wise, there's nothing we can do, but there's lots of things that you can do.
But they don't know.
The problem. And I think they're also, because of the bloody Cancer Act, written, 100 years ago?
Yes, 1939.
It's crazy what we're not allowed to do, because it's this idea that you give somebody false hope. But even though we were collating,
but hope is even kind of
hope cannot be false. I mean, this is one of my it makes me laugh now, but giving somebody false hope, you need hope in order to heal. If you don't have hope of a better
why
would you actually try? Mm-hmm. So it is completely ridiculous to say that, but that's the kind of mindless kind of statement that has come out of the system. We don't want to give people false hope. That's rubbish. Okay?
Yeah.
It's a lie, and it hides a multitude of nasty stuff we don't want to go into. But really, hope is required. Much required.
Yeah, to instigate action.
Exactly.
You know, if you're down there in apathy and there's no point, then you're creating that chemistry, your light actually starts to go out, the cells contract, and next thing you know, they were right.
Mm.
And that's why we have to take that power back. The language that is used is based on a very outdated model of physics.
Yeah.
You know, so we need to move in, and we know this stuff. This is what drives me insane, is that this is all the stuff that we did in Heal Scotland, that I teach, is quantum physics.
Mm-hmm.
It's science, it's proven, the stats are out there, but we're still functioning from this old, outdated model of the body. And what is really interesting as well, that they reckon from the bench to bedside, so they find something new, it takes 18 years before we actually put filters down through the universities and through, and I mean, 18 years, well, we could all be dead
we don't have
in that time.
But
I think, can we talk a little bit about your personal experience with your doctor? How did you find that this sort of synergy? Did they work with you?
There was a disconnect, definitely. Mm-hmm. The first, everything that kind of catapulted me to doing research was that initial meeting, sitting down with the doctor and just looking him in the eye and just saying, what can I do to help myself? And wanting to be proactive. Not everyone wants to be proactive, and this is the thing. It's kind of like, but for those who are seeking that and who are curious, that isn't there. And so I said, what can I do to help myself? And he just said, oh, nothing, just keep doing what you're doing. not asking what I was doing. cancer's a lottery, there's no reason why you got it. And at that point, it was just this kind of light bulb moment of, okay, shit, there is a lot of gaps.
Yes.
But then other people who heard that, that was this reassurance of, okay, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so what does it take to then empower yourself? And I think becoming an empowered patient is so essential.
Totally.
That's a good...
Yeah. In your healing.
Talk. Yes. The next festival.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And
actually it was laughter, but you know, when they knew that I did the festival, there was this kind of rolling the eyes of, oh, you're the one who puts on the festival. No questions of what happens there or what goes on. And they're the hub of cancer research in as a medical university hospital. So
yes. Getting their funding from the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, well, we know that we're tied up in a very closed shop, and we're not going. That's not what we're here to discuss right now, because we're here to discuss how we can empower and get a message out.
Well,
that the three of us are very, very passionate about. And what I love about you guys is that you've been through the, you know, what it feels like to have to be told, and then how you found. And I loved your story the first time I heard you, where you were like, give me chemo radiation. And then because they put you in the watch and wait, inadvertently, accidentally healed yourself.
It's just a set of... And talking about relationship with your oncologist and so on, I was blessed by having a woman and also an intelligent woman, and one that didn't try and... bring my spirit down, as unfortunately I had somebody else try and do later on over the years. He was very sorry about trying that. anyway, he did try.
I forgot about that, actually.
Yes. My Dr. Patricia Clark, she's retired now, and she was actually, she listened to me, she understood enough about who I was, and understood that I needed to do something, and so provided, you know, I wasn't going to damage my physical health by doing it, she went along, and she was measuring my lumps with a tape measure, because we're going back 22 years, because I mean, one of my lumps was so big, you could really feel it, and she said, you know, I think it's getting a bit smaller, and I think it's kind of softer, which means it's kind of breaking down. So carry on with what you're doing. Mm. And then, I changed a bit what I was doing, but went on to sort of fresh juices and had a regular kind of, I had CT scans, but I didn't want them. So I had ultrasound scans after. And even the guy who was doing my ultrasound scans was really interested. So yes. I was blessed, I honestly tell you, I was blessed with having the two main people who were checking who were actually caring. And when the guy who was doing my scans asked me, you know, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, you know, I'm juicing a lot of carrots and so on. He was really excited, and then after, whenever I saw him, he called me Bugs Bunny. He was Bugs Bunny. So he remembered, and he took all the photos of my CT films and so on. So he was
engaged and interested.
Exactly, and you know, that's a true person who is into science and wants to understand how you heal and what's possible. It's not someone who says, well, placebo. I've been taught you do it like this. It's someone who's genuinely interested. And that was part, I think, of the healing that took place, because I trusted them to have my best interest.
Back.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that was brilliant.
You felt safe.
Yeah, yes. And I felt heard.
Yeah.
I felt heard. I didn't feel someone was trying to have like a battle of wits with me, or wills.
A team.
Yeah, and whatever I was doing, they saw it was progressing the way they would have loved for the chemo to have actually worked.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I was told by Patricia Clark in December that my tumours had reduced by 70%, and she was holding it in front of... She said, you know, if we could have achieved that with chemo, we'd be over the moon. Yeah. She said. So, you know, genuine.
So can I just say at this stage about Kathy's book, Why Rabbits Don't Get Lymphoma, and all that information is in there.
Yeah, all the diet, everything.
In a very easy to read way, so if you are interested. And the other thing I think is really important is don't wait till you're sick. Till you start learning about this. Because
we all do, don't we? It's kind of like we only check the car when it breaks down.
Yes.
All of that stuff on whatever level it is.
And I think that's really important, you know, is prevention is obviously better than cure. So having a few juices in a week and really just working on the body. But that book is so easy to read. You'll read it in a night, no problem. And it'll give you all the information that you need if you're interested in more detail. Because I want to move on with these ladies.
Also, it is that thing, and this is why I started the festival, because everything felt completely reactive. It was kind of like, oh, we wouldn't. There was no proactivity. And I think it is that thing that we have a sick care system, not a healthcare system. And people talk about healthcare.
Yeah.
In America, in a lot of places, obviously it's private, a lot of people are having an integrative treatment because there's money involved in that. So most people, they know about all of the options. But everything is kind of this reactive. It's like the roof is leaking and we're running around and putting down buckets, but not actually fixing the roof. The root. And it's getting into that root of...
Absolutely. And that brings me nicely, thank you, into the emotional side of dis-ease, which I know that we all work with. You've just back from India, you've been working with the breath, which you're pretty obsessed about now as well. And how, again, that's a really ignored part of why we get sick, but also, more importantly now, why we get well.
Yes.
And in Glasgow, it's a year's waiting list to see somebody in the NHS for emotional support.
No, it's not.
And in Edinburgh, it's 14 months. So we have a real shortage and we have...
14 months. So down south in England, in London, it's 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because it's too late. That even, we'd say that could be too late.
I know. So can you tell us about what you have discovered in the emotion and what you've investigated and what helped you?
Do you want to start first?
Okay, if you want. Well, what helped me first and foremost was to rediscover meditation. Because I used to do this when I was a teacher in England in comprehensive schools and was quietly going out of my mind with the issues there. And I learned transcendental meditation. But somehow after the initial practice of it, because I felt my life was better or whatever, I didn't feel the need to continue. And suddenly I remembered that I knew how to do this. And because when you have a traumatic diagnosis like that, the first thing you need to do is to quiet down your fear, to recenter yourself so you are in touch with your power. Something like meditation is absolutely wonderful because it does exactly that. The meditation I do is with a mantra. So you use that mantra to quieten your...
What's the mantra?
Well, I can't tell you because it's a secret. But it's a word that was given to me as being my special word, you know, to help me to actually access this kind of calm and so on. And, you know, it doesn't work right away. You've got to practice being aware that you have thoughts and then you go back to your mantra in your head. And then sooner or later, you get to a state where you have no thoughts, no mantra. You just are. And you are in this really amazing, calm, centered, powerful, joyful kind of energy. And the more you do it, the more you know how to reconnect to that energy, to what that feels like during the day even. But I was doing that twice a day for 20 minutes. I did other things. Tai Chi was great because it was a kind of meditation but with the body, and that really worked for me as well. Visualization, affirmations. I mean, again, in the book I mention all exactly what I was doing. But visualization, it's again another tool that stops you paying attention to the fear picture they've given you, and you superimpose another picture, which is, for me, was I had drawn my T cells, which fight cancer cells. I had drawn them as piranhas with very, very open eyes, very focused eyes, big teeth, and they were going after my grey cells, which were the wonky ones that had forgotten that they needed to be removed. And I even added a sound like yum, 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 yum. So I had that in my head all day long, all night long. And that was immensely reassuring because it told me that even though I am not making it happen, this is happening naturally.
Yes. Yeah, I just wanted to say something on kind of following on from people healing or following protocol. And I think it's really important to talk about the fact that you can still heal and not be cured, and the fact that people can still heal and die. And I think there's an element of actually death is not a failure. We kind of see Absolutely. This thing and there's this narrative, and it's important when we say they're not doing everything. I know people who have done so many things and they still die, and that to me has been a big acceptance of actually some people, maybe they're called home, maybe there's so much more that we don't know within that, and recognising that, yeah, healing can happen if you're not cured. Because some people can think, yeah, but maybe I'm not going to be cured, but you can still heal on that yes. level of a kind of cellular level of healing, the way that you go through life or your relationships, or that kind of dynamic can still happen.
Because it ends up about being happy.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's what I say, you know, about the Heal Scotland message. It's not about not dying. We're all going to die. But it's about not suffering yeah. the way we're suffering. And yeah. I think the system
the
as it stands is creates a lot of suffering. And that's the complete opposite of what we want to do, but we yeah. have to also understand that we're in a place where change has to happen.
Yeah.
Our trajectory is not great. We need to instigate and live in a different way.
Yeah.
Back to nature. Breathe, believe, release, and get back to nature.
Rewilding.
Yes,
in
exactly.
All senses.
Because we are nature.
Reconnecting yeah. to nature.
Sure. And each other.
And each other, because rewilding can be about having the nature separate from us, uh-huh. just allowing everything to regenerate, but without us in it. Really what we need to heal is our connection to nature.
Mm.
That's another thing that helped me really heal.
Outside.
Long walks in nature,
yeah,
hugging
yeah, yeah,
trees,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
listening to birds, having birds follow me, just yes. connecting
Remembering
with the elements. Exactly.
Yes.
We forget, we completely forget. Mm. We are of this earth. We are of this planet. We are connected to everything, and as soon as we can reconnect to that, our life is transformed.
Our life force mm. returns.
Yes.
And
yes.
there'll be no smart cities for us.
We're
going into the forest.
No way.
We're going into the forest, back with the trees and the plants, and like we were saying before, growing your own food.
Yes.
Even
yes.
if it's a pot
yes.
in your
yeah.
house
yeah.
with
yeah.
some
yeah.
herbs.
Yeah.
If you cannot grow your own food, think about it.
I need to learn that. I can't really keep many things alive, so
uh-huh.
I need to master that.
Well, find somebody who can.
yeah.
Well, thank you so much, girls. I'm sure we'll have talks in the future
yeah.
because there's such a huge, vast subject. But your coaching and your coaching as well, if people are serious about change. Because I think we all know that we really want to work with people who are ready.
Mm.
And it's about timing, isn't it? And the festival's about really sharing a positive message about
yeah.
community.
Yeah.
Lynn McTaggart's work, community and altruism heal. We need to get back to our communities. We need to look after each other,
yeah.
support and help each other. And we also need to make sure that it's not a competition who's right. We need to pull all our resources and say, what can we take from the allopathic and the holistic,
learning
to
each
help
other.
You,
yeah.
you know, as an individual.
Yeah.
And the only person that can really know that
you.
Is you.
Totally.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Fantastic. It's a pleasure.